Hey there, and welcome to episode 24 of the Better With Running podcast. I'm Zacha Newman, Run to PB co-founder, and Matt stitched me up here. He's put in the king of Kooyong, but I don't know, I've got the local legend status on Strava, but I wouldn't go that far, mate. But Matty, welcome back for another episode.
And definitely the king of Kooyong. Yeah, a few local legend statuses I've seen pop up on Strava, but yeah, doing well, mate, doing well. Been actually making the most of the treadmill lately of just with the only 60 minutes allowed outside for the exercise. I've actually, jumped on a fair bit more. And yeah, I think it's working well. And yeah, just also counting down the days till hopefully stage 4 restrictions get lifted. The big announcement though coming out on Sunday. No idea which way it'll go. Yeah. Cases have been a bit up and down, and but yeah, been thinking sort of and wondering what the first thing you'll be doing once the 5K bubble gets lifted, which hopefully is at the end of this.
I guess we're waiting on Dan the Man to come out and show this roadmap and give us a few more segments so we know where we're heading in the next few weeks or months. But yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, just back on your King of Kooyong comment. Yeah, I have been just getting used to just running in the same spot and going along. I tried mixing it up for a little while, and I have changed it, but I'm in a spot where I try to avoid traffic lights just so I can make best bang for your buck over the 60 minutes, so I can get to onto the trail traffic light free. So I have been rolling along the same trail, and I am getting a bit sick of the same sort of scenery. But in saying that, yeah, when that 5K bubble gets lifted, obviously, first and foremost, it'd be great just to get out and see some family and see some friends. And I think my partner will be pretty happy. Sham, she'll be excited probably to get me out of the house for a little bit longer than the hour. But and also, yeah, that bubble, if we could just go out and run maybe back to the tan, I am missing it. I used to, feels like a long time ago, but that was my go-to spot, 3-4 times a week. So yeah, definitely get back there. I know one of our Run to PB loyal listeners and members, Shannon, who I coach, she's taken the local legend status at the town I saw the other day on Strava. So I'll have to I'll reclaim that one.
I actually did see that. Oh, that's really impressive.
Yeah, super impressive. She lives in she's in sort of South Yarra area, so it's right in the hitting zone for her. And I think, I keep checking in and just making sure that everything's all in place down there for my return.
Yeah, well, she might go exploring a bit more your way and take out some of your local legend statuses.
How are you? What are your thoughts around this? The new restrictions what's going to happen maybe going forward in terms of an extension of being able to get to outside of the 5K? You got somewhere planned you really want to get to?
I guess, like you say, it'd be great to visit family and friends. That'd be the first thing. But yeah, that's obviously whether, maybe they open up the bubble a bit more, but you can't visit people. If that's the case, I'd be looking to head out around, be missing going down the peninsula more. Out down sort of Flinders Way. And also, that's just for more exploring. And then I've been missing getting out to Devil Bend and running out around the roads around there. Really got attached, I guess, to that place. And even started finding some alternative loops around there just before we kind of got all closed up. So I wouldn't mind getting back out there, and because it is such a nice place, and you kind of feel like you're out on the country roads and nice rolling hills, and it's a great spot. And you'll have to come down when you got the chance and when we're allowed to.
For sure, mate. Now you've forged yourself as a vlogging king, and it racking up the views on YouTube. I saw you cracked nearly 1,000 views on that that amazing YouTube clip. So I can imagine getting back out to, you know, Devil's Bend or out back out along the peninsula. You'll have some good landscape and backdrop for some of the new shoots you do going forward.
Yeah, I've got a few things in mind. Just got to put them together and get out with the GoPro again and try to brave it. Yeah, copped a few comments from people laughing at me, but it's a bit of fun. Something different to do and see how that rolls out. Probably do a few sections around the peninsula, try to show off the area because it is such a nice place and yeah, it's pretty photogenic. Got a few things in mind to post eventually when I can get the chance to. And how have you found the last week?
Yeah, like it's still obviously cranking out these 60-minute sessions, so enjoying that. It's been a good change of stimulus. I know with a lot of the athletes I'm coaching in Melbourne where we've been able to apply a lot of these sessions that the coaches have put up on our socials. And I've had a crack at Dave P's one last Saturday. That one was I think I mentioned it last week on the show. I was going to do it, and it was really challenging but rewarding set. Like the 4-minuters coming off a 6-minute, I was I was really having a push in the last one of those, and it was I don't know. Have you had a crack at it on Tuesday? I saw and one up me with the way you went about it in terms of getting distance on me, but how did you find it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a corker session, I reckon, the day fee set. And a lot of the sessions that I really enjoy that I've found are ones that have a bit of a variety of paces in them. Sometimes you hit 6 or 8 by 1K and try to hit them all around the same pace. So I kind of like moving up and down sometimes the paces or just cutting down, like, so sort of said so he'd set that the 6 minutes are meant to be around half marathon effort, then the three four minutes around 5K effort, and the 30 seconds sort of 3K effort. And so I tried to stick to those sort of paces, but I did put the next percenters on, and 5 percenters gave me a bit of a lift, I think. And I may have dipped a bit quicker than those paces. I think I went around sort of 3:10, 3:15 for the 6 minutes. Then one of the 4 minutes even dropped down to 3-minute K, and then just tried to finish off those 2x30 second on offs as hard as I kind of could. I felt like hit it pretty well, and like I wasn't too sure how it was going to go because I hadn't really had a crack at those sort of paces on flat. I've kind of hit, I guess, that sort of effort, but it's been more over the hills around home. But I went to a bit of a flatter course, and so it was remarkably different on a flat course compared to over the hills, and just felt pretty strong over them. So yeah, it came out well, and feel like I'm heading in the right direction. So yeah, got to thank Dave for that session.
Yeah, and I think a lot of I think with these changes in training, I think initially it took a week or so to get your head around, okay, there is a couple of, I've got to drop back the long run and I've got to make a few changes, but you can still get really fit and maintain your fitness over this period. And, I know getting through these sessions that I've been really stoked with the way they've come out. And I think it just gives us the confidence that, this has been a really challenging time for runners in Melbourne. I think Stu McClay, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, and he wrote a really good blog about what Melbourne Victorians have been going through, and they've probably been hit the hardest restrictions in these in terms of 60-minute exercise restrictions and the changes that we've had. But he had some really great tips about staying connected and making sure you just getting out the door and just taking the runs as they come out and really enjoying the process. And there were some really good tips in that blog, Matty. You've had a read of it. What'd you take away from it?
I mean, first of all, he writes so bloody well. Just looking at the strategies and tools that have worked well for himself. And what I guess one of the things that really resonated with me was finding somewhere new to run. And whether it's just an oval or, you know, somewhere that you're not normally that you don't normally head towards. But yeah, I've kind of, because you've been in that 5K bubble, and like I'm a bit of a sort of stick to habit, and so my morning runs are pretty much all the same, my Arvo runs are all the same. But yeah, it sort of made me think, oh, what about if I try these other streets? And yeah, I sort of found some really amazing places to run that I didn't really know that were going to be that good. So yeah, I guess finding somewhere new to run was the one that really hit me, and I've taken on board.
Yeah, and I know with a few of my athletes been really creative around just going into some hilly streets and doing some hill workouts in there that we usually wouldn't go with, and getting some bang for your buck off a shorter hill workout. So plenty of things. It's a really good read. I think we'll share the link in the show notes, and it's on our social. So yeah, definitely recommend people get around that article.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, Zacho, yeah, we've got another big announcement to make in regards to a new coach joining the ranks at Run to PB. I'll let you do the honours in breaking the news. What have we got?
Yeah, and I think a few people who are across our socials would have seen last night, we dropped it that on our story, that Chris O'Neill, who is joining Run to PB. Now, Chris O'Neill is, he's absolutely well and truly accredited across the marathon. He's done 51 marathons, which is quite staggering. You think the guy's like 100, but he's only, you know, he's his late 30s. But Chris O has just been absolutely, he's done so many distances, like so many different marathons, and gone right up the chain. Like he's, you know, he started actually out in the longest stuff. I mean, he debuted his marathon actually coming from a background of hurling. He's Irish, as you hear in this interview a bit later, which will air, that he's got a strong, thick Irish accent. And yeah, Chris actually started off the back of being injured running, just to as a rehab sort of setup, and then ended up running his first marathon, and then 50 odd plus marathons later he's still pumping them out.
Wow, mate. We've got a lot to catch up with there, don't we? Geez, that's, yeah. His body, you'd think that your body would be beaten up off that, but he's still cranking him out. So he's obviously managed it so well, and
he does. Isn't it?
Really impressed, and big inclusion obviously to our coaching at Run to PB, and obviously wealth of knowledge, and I'm sure to be picking his brains around that. Yeah, and now you also caught up with Chris for a bit of an interview, and looking forward to listening to this one.
Yeah, and I was going to say that like Chris went out to 100K. He competed in the World Champs in Spain, I think he was telling me back. It was only 4 years after he did his first marathon. So he's then dropped back to distances. He went out and then decided to work on his speed. So he got his 5K down to a low 15 and run a solid 10 and into the half, and now, you know, really zeroed in on the marathon. But yeah, Chris, so I've done a lot of training with Chris over the years. So we crossed paths back in 2013 over in Japan in a Lake Biwa marathon, and stayed in touch. He was in Perth, I was in Melbourne, and then he managed to come over to Melbourne, and we've since had, you know, 3 or 4 years of some solid training together. And I know myself, Chris is just really a dedicated trainer, but also he's just monotonous with the way he structures his own workouts and programs. So that's probably one of the key reasons why he keeps getting to the line and completing these marathons, because he really knows how to look after his body and plan training blocks. Because as you know, half the battle is getting to the line in these marathons. And if you can get to 50, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, you could be doing something. All right, yeah, let's cross to it.
Chris O'Neill, welcome to the Better With Running podcast. Great to have you on, Chris.
Thanks, Jack. Zacho, pleased to be finally having a chat with you during this strange few months.
It is. Yeah, I know you've spent some time obviously in Melbourne, Victoria, and now you're back over in Perth. And lockdown's a little bit easier over that way, and you're able to get out, do some runs and even an event recently?
Yeah, very lucky to be in Perth, and how we've dodged the COVID issue almost entirely. They dealt with it really well over here. Pretty much, I think we're like stage three now, but pretty much business as usual. Even some events coming back online. I skipped a couple, just wasn't fit enough, you know. Took a bit of a break since February and gradually coming back into some sort of a shape. Jumped in a cross-country race the other week and, yeah, rolled around, but, yeah, it was heavy going, man.
Yeah.
Plenty of sand over here to run through. It was a traditional course. Fair play to the guys over here that have really taken it on. A bit of young blood came into Lakes WA and tried to bring back cross country, which coming from Ireland, I love it. You know, it's fantastic to get out there.
Yeah, and I mentioned in the intro that you do hail from Ireland, and the listeners will definitely know from the accent in there that you are well and truly Irish.
I'll slow down, mate. You're well used to my accent, but for the listeners' benefit, I'll speak very slowly, almost like I've had a beer, but it's a bit early for that.
That's all good, mate. But yeah, you're based in Perth, but when did you actually come over to Australia?
10 years this Christmas, actually. Came out 2010, the end of 2010. Spent five and a half years in Perth originally. Moved to Victoria in 2016 with my wife, just after we got married. We had to move across for her work. As you know, I spent over three years in Vic, Melbourne, rolling around to 10,000 times with you guys. And came back probably last October now again for Claire's work back to Perth. So coming up to a year back here. So over and back to Nullarbor quite a bit. And in fact, this COVID has us thinking of, really, it's quite difficult with two young kids now to be away from family. The border shutting, so I wouldn't be surprised if we end up back in Victoria again sometime.
Yeah, and I was going to just mention, and you just touched on, you've had a new addition to the crew over there, and obviously your lovely wife Claire. And I know we were going to organise this interview a couple of weeks back, and you were coming on board as coaching, but then things become quite busy for you with the new addition, with Ollie arriving a couple of weeks old now.
Yeah, nearly 2 weeks. Came a little bit early, but no problems. He was quite a big boy anyway. Came at 37 and a half weeks in a bit of a surprise last Friday week. So, yeah, trying to get our bearings with two kids. Frankie is two and 3 months. So he's a handful, as every two-year-old is. And just so excited now to watch the new little fella grow and enhance our life, same as the first guy did, you know.
Yeah, and actually, I understand you were out for a run at the time and got a call from to maybe put down and turn into a progression run.
It happened pretty much like that. Yeah, I was in work and I get this phone call saying she had popped into the hospital to be monitored. She thought she had some movement or whatever, but you know, Claire, very. No drama whatsoever. Oh, don't worry about it. Just come home and chill out at home. So I did. I left my project out at the airport and drove back home. And she called me again and she goes, probably going to be on this machine. Nothing to worry about. They're going to monitor me. You should just pop out for a run. And I just thought, I don't know. Like, I've been running almost 20 years and never ran with a phone. So just something told me to bring the bloody phone, you know, just in case.
Wow.
And we lived beside a couple of lakes. And I popped out onto one of the trails. And I was probably about 5 minutes in. And I get the phone call and she just says, basically, it's coming now. You got to get to the hospital. And I'm cruising around 5 minute pace, you know, the old man shuffle. And next thing I'm running 340s trying to get to her car because it was parked in a weird part of town. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, drove her car home, but then had to work out how I'd take care of Frankie, who's in daycare. So, yeah, we had a friend of ours at daycare, one of the educators, helped look after him. So I finally sorted him out and then got myself to the hospital. Yeah, sat down for like half a second and the doctor just said, scrub up, we're on.
Yeah, well.
So yeah, above threshold for a while, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'll have to go back on that run and hopefully you got a lot of kudos for that one.
Yeah, I put it down on Strava. That's one that I'll have to retitle. Yeah. Didn't want to title it at the time for obvious reasons, but yeah. It's an interesting run.
Fantastic, mate. Hey, yeah, I just want to go back as we do on these podcasts and probably get an insight into where it all came from as a runner and where you started. And you mentioned growing up in Ireland. Now, was sport a big part of your life growing up?
It was, yeah. It's a huge part. I'm from a small town. Well, not quite a village, but it's a town that probably 2,500 people. Irish part of the country I'm from is a place called Kilkenny, which is very much hurling is an Irish sport. It's very, very much a religion to the Kilkenny people. It's almost like footy in Victoria, you know. It's huge. So growing up, I would have began playing hurling from very young age, maybe 6 or 8 years old, and straight through my teenage years, took it quite serious into the senior ranks as an adult. It involved a lot of, I suppose, thinking back now, I should have realized that I enjoyed running, because each pre-season I took a lot of enjoyment out of getting fit again and just doing the endurance side of a pre-season prep. And never really, the penny never dropped, I suppose, that, you know, maybe I should do a bit of athletics as well. So to summarize how I ended up in running then, I guess, was during that early 20s, I had a pretty bad back injury where I had a stress fracture in my sacrum, but some other issues with my SI joints. Got finally diagnosed, and going back in 2003 in Ireland, it was quite difficult to get some MRIs and so on. So it took about a year. Got diagnosed, stacked on a lot of weight, basically couldn't do anything, even carry a bag, you know, to the office. My weight ballooned to almost 90 kilos. So finally coming out of that injury cloud, I began running like many do on a treadmill, you know, in gyms on the way home from the office or whatever. And just got real curious about extending that 20 minutes to 25 to up to an hour. But I suppose the main goal was always to get back to the hurling, you know, this Irish sport that we all love. And I just saw that as a means to an end to get back to playing that.
So when you were hurling, when you were competing in the hurling or playing, and you love the competitive side of it, like you said, you might love the pushing yourself, but was it also that competitive drive or the team, almost part of being a team as well?
I love the team aspect of it, but I'm a twin, and you know, even having a twin brother growing up in the 80s and 90s, it's you're very competitive even in your own back garden. So it's kind of, it flowed through to, and both of us by nature really enjoyed the competitive aspect of the team sports and trying to then, you know, better yourself to maybe get selected for some representative teams, county level, etc. So I really went all in. Took it to a higher level, but just didn't quite get to that. Even though it's an amateur sport in Ireland, I didn't quite get to that final, I suppose, elite level. But nonetheless, just fantastic part of my life. It was almost like the first half of my sporting life was hurling. And then a slight overlap at the end when I started running and tried to still compete with in hurling. And as you know, when you start running more, you lean up, you start developing this runner's body.
You need to be quite big to be.
Similar physicality to the AFL. So it's almost like field hockey, but with an AFL type physicality to it. So you bulk helps, and I leaned up quite a bit, but albeit still put in a central position. So it wasn't really working when you start dislocating shoulders and breaking ribs and stuff. So eventually, just in 2009, I decided I was just going to focus on my running. At that point, I had grown very fond of marathons and ultra marathons to be happy to park that part of my sporting life and start exploring the running and see how I could improve in that sport.
So when you transitioned out of the hurling and then started to run a bit more, say 2007 into your debut in, did you do your first marathon in 2007?
Yeah, it's certainly something I wouldn't recommend is how I've ran the whole distance progression. In 2007, I was still hurling, but I was running probably 10 milers every second day, really loving it. And my cousin and I, New Year's Eve, decided, all right, a few beers, we're out of course. We're going to run the Dublin City Marathon in 2007. And jumped in that. We had no clue what we were doing. Like, we had one watch between us on the start line and bought it for like $5 or something. And it only went to 60 minutes. So that wasn't very much use at all. And I remember looking at him with just fear and dread on the start line. It's a big city marathon. We ran as far as 28K in a long run. Yeah. And all these guys were there with their fuel belts and all sorts of stuff, strapped in with gels and whatnot. And us two clueless guys standing there with a belly full of porridge and maybe a banana in our hand. We were in for a big day. We got around. I ended up running 3:43. Loved every minute of it. It's just so, it was such a life-changing experience, you know. Finishing, felt like I was picking it up, but I don't really know if I was, but finishing through a very historical part of Dublin and just the crowds and sense of achievement, getting over the line, I was hooked immediately. And basically it was what's next was what the chatter was down the pub that evening. Just tried to see what else I could do and what other races were out there, you know.
So that was the impetus to go, yep, let's start to do a bit more of this. And the hurling was to go to the wayside, because it's crazy now. Yeah. When you look back after doing that first marathon, finishing it, you know, hyped up, even, you know, you've had a really good day out experience, to then go on and run. Your resume now has 51 marathons in there, including the comrades. Like, comrades on five occasions. I mean, you must be just chuffed to think back then that first marathon you towed the line. You think, would you have done 50 more of them down the track? And even go on to represent Ireland in the World 100K champs. And that was only, I was just chatting to you off there about that, and it was in 2011, so that was like, what, 4 or 5 years after you did your debut marathon?
Yeah, by nature, I'm a very curious kind of fella. I'm always trying to understand if I'm going to go in and do something, I would try and do it as best I can and do it well. So after 2007, I started researching the old sort of literature from the 70s, 80s, even into the early 90s about marathon running and how you can improve potentially. And I just got so interested in it. During that kind of period, I came across the comrades and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And bear in mind, at this time, I had only run one marathon. I actually hadn't run a 10 or a 5 or a half even. I just went straight to the marathon. And then the second ever race was the comrades in 2008. By which time I was training for comrades in sort of a long run progression plan, because it's 90K, you got it. I didn't just, you know, do what I did for the marathon and just do the bare minimum. But it was a tough day. I ran around 10 hours, which is pretty average considering that you've got a 12 hour limit. And after that, it just took off, man. Like, well, we went 5 comrades in a row, but we used a lot of marathons to prepare for the comrades as training runs. So you begin to accumulate them quite quickly then. And I might have focused on one marathon a year during that period where I'd try and run maybe 240 type an effort. And it just started to add up. And during this time, being a bit bit of an engineer, I like to track in handwritten diaries how I was doing, doing these races and how I was getting fit and what worked and what didn't. And 1 year recently, I decided I better add up these. A couple of years ago, I did a tot on them and I've realized, God, I'm nearly at 50, you know? So where I am, I'm at 51 now, so I would count 100K races as one marathon, essentially. Mm. This just gets silly when you start splitting them or trying to differentiate one from another. And 52 was meant to be in Tokyo this year, but it got cancelled the week out, and I'm still trying to get fit for 52, man.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the comrades, I guess in Australia, we don't talk about, I mean, it's known, but it is known around running circles, but it's probably, yeah, it is the world's, I would say, oldest and biggest ultra marathon.
It's been around over probably nearly 100 years now, apart from a break that they had during the war years. So the probably early 90s edition. This year got cancelled, of course, but it's been around since 1922, I believe.
Yeah, well, yeah, and they run it two way, you know, up and down, so differentiate each year. So what, 87 and 90?
Pretty much 90K or thereabouts each year, depending on if there's a finished stadium gets changed from the cricket ground to the soccer pitch or whatnot. But it's in a unique event, and the standard there is just astonishing in a sense of the quality of the athlete. You get 209 guys rocking up there, Olympians. So it's certainly not your typical ultra slugfest where you can just survive. It's certainly, even though it's 90K, it's raced. I start getting very interested in it, obviously, starting with a 10-hour run, finished up in 2012, running 6 hours, 15 minutes. And I realized that you attack it as aggressively as you would attack a marathon. You know, you got to run a very strong sub-4-minute K type pace to compete over there. But fantastic event and some great memories on that road. Certainly the down run for me is not, it's not my favorite. It's it just destroys you. Some great history over there. I love that.
So were you learning this on the fly? Like you went to 5, so you obviously got faster. You got four hours faster pretty much. Landing yourself on one of the professional on the teams there. Then was it Nedbank? Were you part of that team over there?
Yeah, Nedbank. There is some very strong clubs that race comrades almost like a professional team. And I had got to the point where I ran unattached for 4 years, and I was running around 6:30 in 2011. And you mentioned I went to the World 100K, and at the race hotel, one of the British girls, Ellie Greenwood, was at the breakfast table, and she just said you should just reach out to Nedbank next time you do comrades. It just, they provide logistics in terms of drink support and so on. It just makes things a lot easier in terms of performance. So I did. I reached out to Nedbank running team and I ran with them in 2012, and that alone allowed me to take another 15 minutes off of my comrades' time just with those type of guys. And, you know, you're mixing with the 208 Russian guy and the 215 guy from Lesotho and stuff. It's just, you learn so much from these people, you know?
Yeah, sounds awesome. And that, then you sort of started to shift as a lot of people would have stayed in the ultra or stayed on the road and done the longer stuff like you did, but you ended up dropping back and heading towards, you know, improving your 10K, your half and your marathon. That's where you went.
And conscious decision there, Saka. In 2012, I decided I'm going to stop ultras entirely to do just that, to try and really improve those times while I was still in my, you know, early 30s, you know.
Who was guiding you then? Like, did you have some influences? Were you still reading a lot?
At the time, yeah, I was coaching myself for a lot of that early years. And then for about 18 months, one of the guys here, Raf Ball, which you're probably familiar with, wrote my program for that initial 18-month period where I decided to go back down to the traditional road racing distances. So that, guided by Raf at that time, and probably from early 2014, just started writing my own program again. I just going back to that curiosity and trying to write something specific to me and getting me to a peak was what I was interested in. It was my own little guinea pig, if you like. And I loved that trial and error approach to applying that to myself initially, because you got to work out what works for you. And yeah, for the last 6 years, just been guiding myself. And you do so many of these, as you know. Intuition tells you what you should do week on week. When you're in it for 10 years, you kind of know what to do to get to progress. So I'm loving that aspect of it as well. Just guiding myself.
Particularly, yeah, when you start traveling around and meeting different runners and training in different groups and competing overseas, and probably one of the areas that a few listeners would be interested to know that you actually took some time off work in about 2014, correct me if I'm wrong, and had a stint in Kenya in the home of distance running.
Yeah, that's right. About 2014, I was working as a construction professional at that point, 10 years into my career. And I was single at the time, well, actually, early stages of dating my now wife. And I decided, yeah, I need to take some time off to refresh from work. But also, being so interested in the running and marathon in particular, I wanted to learn a bit more about, you know, how the real good guys do it and what's the secret, if you like. And went to Kenya in the January of that year. I did two trips there that year. Spent 4 weeks initially and raced a Lake Biwa marathon off a 4 week block in Kenya. Got quite fit over there. Ended up running a 2:27. I think 4 weeks might be a bit short to get over that altitude and then get some quality training in. But I went back then for 7 weeks towards the end of 2014 while I was on a bit of a leave of absence from work, and I really got a lot of value out of just running with the groups over there, just seeing what they did and just sort of keeping my eyes and ears open. By all means, I'm not an elite runner of any sort, but nonetheless, you can pick up little tips and the do's and don'ts and then apply it to yourself kind of when you get back home, you know? And yeah, it's a fantastic year over there and lots of cool stories and memories that I'm sure I've been in your ear over the years back in Melbourne when we ran and told you a few of them.
Because I know it must be, in a way, it's a pretty bold move to go over there. I mean, there was some Westerners there, but it's a pretty intimidating environment. You get there and you've got, you know, I've seen photos and videos of the long runs and the fartlek sessions where, you know, it's tough and conditions are hard and the guys and girls, they just go after it. And can you recall any of these sort of sessions that are almost, just eye-opening for you, that coming out from Perth and Ireland and
The sheer just rawness of it was what struck me. It's very raw, it's very tough environment, but there's very little science to it as well. If I was to look back now, everything is fond memories of Kenya, but it's bloody hard when you're there running, extremely hilly, dirt roads. So when I went there, I decided I wasn't going to go the traditional Westerner approach where I go to Lorna Kiplagat's, you know, accommodation. It's very nice. It's like a hotel. I decided I wasn't going to do that. There's two or three of those options. And to be fair, if you went there, you'd end up running with the British or the Germans or Italians or whatever, and you'll do what they're doing. So you're not actually exposing yourself to the Kenyan way. So what I did was I reached out to some Irish guys who had spent some time there, 2010, 2011 period. And they had a lot of friends and connections there. And they set me up with a more, let's call it, rustic accommodation option, and quite cheap as well. And I was staying in one of the guest houses owned by a really good 10,000 meter runner, Sylvia Kibet. Encountered Jake and Zane Robinson for those two trips, and they were so helpful in pointing me in the right direction of which workouts to join and which groups to jump in with, because there's hundreds of guys running around the streets and you don't want to jump in with the wrong group either. It's just, they just kill you. So I did a lot of workouts with there was a guy called Gilbert Kirwa's group. He was a big marathon guy at the time, 206 fella. So I would jump in with his sessions, and like, I couldn't do them all because I'm just not good enough, I guess. So if he was doing K reps, I would do 600 meters of it. There'd be 25 guys in the group, and I'd be, you know, in the final third of that snake on a track in the famous Camerini dirt track down there in E10. I would do the 600s of the thousands, so I get a bit more recovery. And if I was really struggling, I'd skip on. But just listening to how precise they were, how they executed the session, was just such an experience. Like, Gilbert would lead the session from fifth man in the line, you know. He was never on the front very often. Then the famous fartlek, that's unique. They meet outside of town 9 o'clock on every Thursday, and the bloke just stands up on the ditch and dictates the session, whether it's a 2-1 fartlek or 3-1 or whatnot. Usually goes for about 17 reps, I suppose, almost an hour. I remember one particular day on my second trip, I think I jogged down as my warm up, and I looked around. It was one other white guy. It was Nipper from Sydney.
Oh yeah,
James Nipper. And the two of us looked at each other with a very nervous look, and I knew Nipper from Falls Creek, and we knew we were in for it, man. It was helter skelter. And we took off. Nipper was probably in the front third. I was in the middle third. He's just hanging on. It's just amazing. And over the hills, it was such a simple session of 2-1 fartlek times 13 reps or something. And fantastic memories. And you don't have to be doing these super sessions or, you know, anything very complicated. Just doing a fartlek over hills, it's gold. So great memories.
So really, I guess, change your perspective, maybe on life, but more on your running, and maybe physically and mentally made you a lot tougher to come back, because you've gone on and run a lot faster off the back of that.
Yeah, definitely did. Long runs, for example, a good story would be the respect you get from those Kenyans when you do. There was a heavy Italian influence in the marathon training in E10, and the respect you gain from them by doing a 40K long run, and the confidence you get yourself from doing them is huge. And one particular one, I went along with Gilbert's group again, and there was a van with our gear in it and some nutrition. And there was one other guy in there, a Canadian guy called Reed Coolset, real good runner, he's run 210. And the 40K run was down to 350 pace after 6K. Like, it was getting moving. And I was just adamant I was going to finish this 40K. But I had to go, had to do a loose stop, you know. I said to Reed, I've got to go to the toilet here. And he goes, mate, you ain't getting back on if you stop. But I had to stop, and I did. And yes, I didn't get back on. But what that meant was I didn't have any water for the next 30K.
Oh, wow.
This is bloody altitude, you know, it's just middle of nowhere. But off I went anyway, and even as good as the group was, there was some blow-ups, and there were lads falling back, Kenyans blowing up everywhere. And I said, I don't care where I am in the countryside, I'm stopping my watch at 40K and I'm walking back to town. And I did. I stopped it. And we ended up running 40K in 2:38. But I was panicking then, because, like, I had to get to town. I didn't know where I was. This ute comes past with about, maybe slight exaggeration, but 20 Kenyans in the back of it. Mm. And they said, right, you want to lift and jump in? And you were like, there it is, the Mazungo, he's lost or whatever. But then we start chatting about running, and I told them I did 40K, and they couldn't believe it. And I showed them my Garmin. They wanted to see it. They'd like, wow. All of a sudden, instant respect, you know?
Yeah.
And you begin to reflect on it after yourself, and you think, just run like 350s for 40K at 2,400 meters altitude. I didn't die, so I need to attack the next marathon I do. And your mindset changes to the point where the distance doesn't worry you then anymore, I guess. And since then, since 2014, I really did attack sometimes. Sometimes blowing up, sometimes executing. You know, you get probably a strike rate of 2 out of 5 marathons that go well. And yeah, I ended up getting my PB down to 2:23 after several attempts since the Kenya trip. But yeah, great journey. I loved every minute of it, even the disappointments, you know. But a big shift from my trip to Kenya. From there on after, I was really not really scared of splitting a little bit quicker than probably should. But you're not going to die, really. You're just going to, you know, you're going to have to deal with it, getting a bit slower and the drop off. But as long as it doesn't drop off too much, you can run quite well, you know.
Yeah, I mean that it's a great story about going over to another country and then being able to connect with other people from the other side of the world, and just to have that opportunity to travel. And that's what you've done with your running, because you're a real journeyman of 51 marathons, and you've raced some of the majors. Like, you've done Berlin twice, Tokyo 4 times, Chicago at least once. But then Japan's been a real happy hunting ground for you, as we sort of, and as you alluded to, coming off that Kenya trip, you were able to then really drive home your 5K, 10K, you've got your half marathon under the 70-minute mark. But it was Tokyo where you managed to crack the big PB in 2018, running 2:23. I was just thinking.
Yeah, finally got to knock, because that PB was almost 5 years old at that point, you know. So Tokyo was definitely a happy hunting ground, and we pair up our marathon running, Claire and I, we travel once a year. And it helps that she's a very good marathon runner and has a great love of the sport as well. So it helps that she understands that passion that we share. And we've used it as an excuse to travel more than actually race, I guess.
Yeah, or just on Japan, I actually just thinking back, that's actually where we met, because it was at Biwa.
Yeah.
Back in, all the way back in, maybe 2013.
2013, mate. It's 7 years ago. It's almost.
And I wasn't even running that day. I was on the bike following the course, because I got injured 3 weeks or 4 weeks out, and I'd had my flights booked. And I remember still going, because I was, you know, I had 2 weeks planned holiday. So I went along and I met your coach at the time, Raph, and yourself. And yeah, you had a good day. You ran 2:25 if I look back at the results. And then
it was a very memorable day, and quite cold. If you remember, you were on the bike, as you said. There's a few speckles of snow coming down, and that's another one it's a beautiful race and very, very historic, but it's a field of 200 or 300, and it's hard going down there. And that was my first Japanese race, but I ended up running probably 8 more in Japan since then. It's just a great culture over there, and offers a great option for an Australian based runner. Time difference and weather and so on, it's pretty easy to adjust to, you know.
Yeah, and Tokyo's on the board for what, four Tokyo marathons, and
four Tokyos, yeah. You get very familiar with the course, and even the, you know, the logistics of, you know, those majors are not, there's a lot of stress involved in getting to the start line, checking your luggage in and whatnot. On my fourth attempt, well, my third attempt was actually the PB, but by then I knew how to do it very efficiently at the start, and I knew the course where the U-turns were and the hairpins. And I was, I suppose, I was also very fit at the time. I'd spend a lot of time training with you guys then, but also mentally I had peaked as well in how I was. Like, people ask what went right on the day of the race. I don't really know, but it's how I dealt with the stuff that went wrong. Was what it resulted in the PBs, like in the PB, I guess. Like, going out a bit fast, Tokyo's got a bit of a downhill first 5K. I was very sharp mentally that day, where I consciously decided I was going to slow down at 7K and join the elite women, because they had four pacers, on just Japanese pacers, they're just like clockwork, you know. And that was the first kind of decision I made, that it was so clear in my mind that was the right thing to do. I just did it. And then later on, like getting a stitch, for example, and how I've navigated through that period of where you've got that pain in your ribs, and another very in control type decision in terms of slowing down and leaving the group, move away from me a bit and not get stressed about it. That was, it was very satisfying how I dealt with those issues and headwinds and so on. Tokyo's got a hairpin, maybe around the 35K mark. And you're on for home then, and it's actually prevailing wind, so you're always going to get a headwind for the last 5 or 6K. And it didn't faze me. I was just mentally ready to just charge into the wind. So, reflecting now, it's more how I dealt with the issues rather than being like, you know, having a perfect race, because I don't think those races exist in my view, you know.
Especially knowing that, you know, you've done, at that stage, you must have done 45 plus, you know, preps for marathons and ultras. So, you know what it's like to do all the work, the lead up, but then that race week where things come at you, and, you know, in a overseas, you got your flights to contend with, but, you know, it sounds like you were able to, like you said, on the fly, make the right decisions. How about hydration and like, is that something that you were able to, the fueling strategy, is that something?
Fueling strategy. That's a funny one. Cause it's like I would, if I'm advising some friends or athletes, everyone is different in terms of what training works for them or what they respond to, even load management. Fueling is the same. Our mate Moose, for example, I know, speaking to him, he took as much as 5 gels in some marathons, 6 even. Yeah. And maybe it's through my ultra background, but I get by on maybe 2 gels, and I can operate off water that the kind of back of a packer kind of runner, the guy just running in a costume would use water from the tables. And I'm happy enough to do that. So I'm okay not having a preferred drinks type thing, you know?
And you try and some things?
2 gels.
And you're trialing some training as well in the lead up?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I would try and do my long runs off a couple of gels and just plain water. Find that Tokyo is a bit cool in that regard. the weather is coming out of there. Winter, it's you're not covered in salt at the end. You know, it's not super hot, so water is enough. It's, assuming you're well hydrated in the days leading in, and that's one of the reasons I do enjoy going back to Lake Biwa, Fukuoka, and these places, because my body seems to like the 10 degrees weather that they get usually, you know. You will recall, like, I remember talking to you in that, the lead into that race, and at the time there was a lot of, well, how would you say, fashionable marathon workouts that everyone was pumping every week. And in that particular build-up, I didn't do any super sessions of like that I would describe super sessions. I just layered weeks on weeks on weeks of 100 miles a week. And I think the best session I did was with you guys, and it was your session. It wasn't even in my program. You remember that 4x2 mile that we did down along the Yarra?
Yeah.
Real controlled, you know, just ticked it off sometime in January, I think it was. And that was the extent of it. It was, I didn't go reaching for anything to validate my fitness. And in fact, I got to the race and I didn't know how fit I was. I just felt right, you know?
Yeah. I remember that build up. You're so consistent and you're just day in, day out. And you ride the waves of, you know, maybe a Tuesday workout doesn't go well, but then the Saturday goes well, you know, comes out, yeah. And then you're back on a Sunday, and then you just keep rotating through the weeks. But yeah, and it was so exciting to see that result come through, because I know you've been really pushing for it. You know, had multiple attempts at trying to crack that time, and to go and get it done was really, really exciting to watch from afar. Mm. On the marathon list, I mean, there's some, obviously we mentioned the majors in there. You've also got, you know, your Frankfurt in there and Dublin, and a lot of races in Perth, and you've got Melbourne. Have you got something left on the bucket list?
Well, I'm 38 now, so I'm certainly coming to the end of training for PBs. But Boston for me is definitely on the bucket list. It's such a historic event. Like I said earlier, I was very fond of reading about the 70s and 80s, the Bill Rogers of the world, and the Dick Beardsleys, famous guys related to the Boston Marathon. Yeah. So yeah, that's on my list. I had an entry a few years ago, but our first son was due around that time. So yeah, I took the option to skip that.
Yeah.
And that was the year that they had the torrential rain, so maybe it wasn't that one to skip either. So as soon as we get the world back as we know it, I'll try and get a qualifier, and you get over there in a couple of years, hopefully.
Well, I guess with the way it is at the moment, it's, you know, maybe races here and will come on, and maybe there's a marathon in the pipeline down the track for you down in over in Perth. Or, I mean, I'm just looking back at that stint you mentioned earlier about coming over to Victoria, or living in Victoria, Melbourne, and competing. We managed to snag you as a recruit for Melbourne Uni. Did the relays next year. I know we did a lot of training together back then, and the races. And I actually think you spent some time down in Ballarat with Lisa Waitman, did some training blocks with her. I guess as a fan of the sport, it must be awesome to be able to get in amongst it as well and help some of these athletes out. Lisa in particular in there.
Yeah, it's a great period for my running was the 3 years in Melbourne. And like, I did obviously finally snag that PB in the marathon, but I ended up running PBs at all distances, and I probably put it all down to the culture in Victoria and the particularly the XCR series. It's it blew my mind going there in 2016. At the end of your XCR season, I was there when you ran that come from behind win in Burnley. That was my first experience of XCR and how they set it up. It was just so exciting. And yeah, I jumped on board with Melbourne Uni the following season and ended up running 15K PB, a 10K and a half marathon PB in my time over there. And looking back, being in my mid to late 30s, probably shouldn't have been ticking those off, but it just
the culture just pulled those performances out of me, you know. It was just fantastic. So I'm trying to sort of look back at that time and replicate what I did with you guys over here to try and continue chasing a few PBs for another few years. Ballarat, of course, for me, it's the home of distance running, arguably. Great history up there. And Claire, my wife, initially became very friendly with Lisa, because Lisa spends a lot of time in Ballarat. She's got in-laws up there. And as good as the running is up there, there's very few people hammering the workouts around the lake in Ballarat. So you do meet people quite quickly, and that's how we ended up meeting Lisa Waitman, one of the greats of female distance running in Australia, still running, you know, 226 only a few months ago. And I just jumped in a few of our workouts over the years, just really enjoyed the grittiness, but also listening and learning, because she's a Telford athlete. You want to soak up like every bit of info you can, like a bit of a sponge, and that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years, you know. And I loved Ballarat, loved the culture with Nathan Hartigan and Mona and Julian Spence and all those guys up there. It was a fantastic experience. The learnings is I need to run more hills, mate. they kill you on Sundays.
Yeah, I've heard you've been out there with Mona and the gang out there and hammered yourself to pieces in some of those Sunday long runs.
great group, fantastic. Yeah. And Julian would attest to how much it benefited him, and he's a 225 guy down to a 214 guy. It's just
exactly,
it's amazing.
Yeah. Fantastic. Mm. Hey, you mentioned Claire being having some family down in Ballarat, and I actually I wanted to clear something up there for some of the listeners and for myself, because Claire, I touched base with Claire during the week, and she there's some conjecture about how you guys met, and we've got a few different versions kicking around. We wanted to get your take on this, on how you actually met. Was it comrades involved or something?
Yeah. Comrades is an old man's game, typically. And we were young people at the time, 2012, and we met there and gravitated to each other because we were the only people that were 30, 31 at the time, whatever it was, and everyone else was 50. And we've been friends for some time after that, and began dating before I decided I was going to bugger off to Kenya. So she's a woman of great patience, and she tolerated a lot in the early days. And here we are six years later with two kids and just loving life.
So is it true that you actually organized to, you said, hey, let's meet me in Chicago, let's go for a marathon?
Yeah, I decided to take the 6 months off, and I had entered Chicago like as I was rounding into some real good shape, as it was going to be my goal for the year. And she had entered Melbourne as her goal race. And, I began to miss her real quick because I was away in Europe and she was down here. And somehow convinced her very selfishly, you should do Chicago. You can get in with this semi-elite entry. And I sent her the link, yada, yada. And I convinced her that it was way better than Melbourne. And like I said, I just wanted to catch up with her in the October of that year. And since then we've been together and obviously, inseparable, really.
Yeah, and obviously exciting times with the family growing, but also you've shared some really special times, you know, training, supporting, pacing each other, and a huge highlight was Berlin in 2018, where you actually, correct me if I'm wrong, that was your 50th marathon,
it was very, like I wasn't wanting to do anything particular for a 50th race. It just so happened to land on that number, but the experience was all about Claire. It was between the time of having our two kids, and it was probably around 15 or 16 months after Frankie was born. And Claire had run, I'd paced her a few times over the years, but she had got her PB down to 301 in So very close to that famous 3-hour barrier in Tokyo in 2016, I think it was. And it's hard to know when you come back after a baby how you go. Funny enough, they all go, all these women, superhumans, they always go much better than we realize and just blow our minds. But she had a build up that was a bit unconventional and a bit different to what she did before. Ran a lot of Ballarat Hills, ran a lot of tempos. And I decided I was going to jump in with her in Melbourne in Berlin, and help her out. Convinced her to leave the watch at home and just let me drive the bus. And she just blew my mind. It was the highlight of my running is that final 10K of that race and the happiness, but also how deep she dug as well. To get to the point where we saw her folks and our son Frankie, probably about 38 kilometer mark, and she just lifted all the way through to the finish, running 2:58 dead. It was fantastic to lob so much time off her PB, but also in the way she did it, which is you have a baby, you take a year off basically, you know.
Yeah.
It was so memorable, and the happiness at the end was just incredible. You know, we had dinner afterwards, and it's just that grin that you have, you know, the feeling there, it's just, it doesn't wear off for quite some time. And I had one myself being a part of it.
Pretty game move as well, just saying, leave me to do the drive and just follow. And I know you guys have done a lot of races together and training, and, you've been out on the bike with her and vice versa. You've probably had a few interesting times over the journey as well. When things happen,
there's been some flowery language in those sessions, but we had tried that little trick before in the Burnley half, where I took the watch and she left hers in the car, and she ran PB that day in the XCR race. So she did trust me as much as she would say she doesn't. She let me run with it. And basically, I really tuned into her breathing. And if I felt that she was laboring at all, I would have just backed it off a bit. But she was well within her threshold for marathon. And it went really well. I loved it.
And as Claire gets back running, you know, in the near future, you'll be back to sort of a tag teaming type arrangement, I guess. How do you manage family life now with the two kids? You're both working. You want to get your runs.
Busy jobs. So the jobs is the biggest challenge. We'll do a lot of hours, both of us, and then the two kids that take some time out of the day as well. And in fact, it benefits your running in a way, because you're more precise in how you get your sessions done. You're more efficient. You don't muck about. We kind of tag team where we split the days of the long run. So she might do one on a Saturday and I'll do my long run on a Sunday. And often be flexible, basically. It's not unusual for me to do a long run on a Sunday afternoon, which seems very strange to most of us, where we're traditionally a Sunday morning long run, church of the long run, or whatever they call it. So you just got to be flexible to punch it out when you can, and get used to the alarm clock going off at 5 a.m. to log some of those jogging miles, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's some good tips, I guess, for some couples that run. And I guess that, because it can get hard when one person's going well and the other's maybe injured, or, you know, you ride that roller coaster as runners. So, yeah, I guess looking after each other and giving each other the opportunity to go after their goals individually at times seems to be the key. And you guys have got it worked out at the moment.
Yeah, certainly. And Claire would probably agree with me that we try not to have kind of a goal type races in the same period. It's just not going to work. It's more of support each other at different times of a calendar year, and one is going for it and the other guy is, or the other person is supporting role, and that seems to work out well. And she's just she's just fantastic when she allows me to chase something, and I try and repay the favors later on in the year when she runs her A races. The one thing I would say on the tag team approach is, you know, all Aussie 7-day cycle and the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday thing, that's chucked in the dustbin for us. It's just, this can't work. It doesn't really work with two kids and two runners in the house. So I run my sessions when, you know, sometimes on a Wednesday or a Friday, and you just got to be flexible and not worry about, you know, the old traditional established Australian way, you know.
Yeah. Hey, reflecting on your training, you know, reflecting back to your completing the 51 marathons, because to actually get through 51 marathons, you've got to do the training to get to the line. And I also, I had a sneaky look on your Strava the other day, and it was for all time. I mean, you've done more than this, but all time showing on Strava is at nearly 20,000 Ks, which, you know, that's only what? For you, what would you average a year? I'm trying to think, you're probably doing 4,000,
5,000. Well, I only started using Strava. I was getting a bit lazy in terms of, you know, I was documenting a lot in handwritten diaries, and I still do, but now it's just summary type stuff, just because I want to have a volume of diaries of 20 years or whatever to hand on just to people to flick through. But I jumped on Strava in 2018, I guess, but adding up the diaries, probably 10 years, averaging 7,000 kilometers a year, 10 years. So, philosophy wise, I think volume is important, but it shouldn't be looked at as a number of 100 miles a week is the figure. It's got to be what your threshold individually for volume is, you know. If it could be 120Ks for some people, but if it's consistently 120 week on week, year on year, it's the benefit's huge, you know. Like, now I don't need to run that kind of volume. I can run 130Ks a week and still reap the reward of 10 years at 170, you know. A lot of trips around the world, I reckon, Zach.
Yeah. And it's a lot of K, a lot of hard sessions in there, a lot of long runs, and I guess a lot of experiences and fun and rewards along the way. But when you think back and you take some time, what do you think running's taught you about yourself? You know,
Resilience is something I've taken from it. It's benefited me in many ways, but you carry a lot of it forward to your professional life in a work environment. It enhances that in terms of the discipline to be a marathon runner. It gives you good habits to carry into the office life, and discipline and energy applied to work gives you some good results in that aspect of your life. And if you get those good habits through running, employers should really be receptive to runners and athletes and people that want to do stuff outside of work, because they perform better in the workplace as well. For me personally, I think looking back now, I've become less competitive as a mindset. It's the friends and the memories is what I've looked back fondly on, and the places we've traveled and experienced. Like after Berlin last year, we had that amazing time when Claire ran fast. And one of my highlights of the year was a workout I did in Prague. Just love. I less competitive now and more in the moment, I guess. And I would say that's how I'll continue into the masters category. Just enjoying the moment and getting out in the early morning and clearing the headspace for the day ahead, you know.
Yeah, I think the mental health benefits and, you know, being out there and getting away from the desk now, as you know, we're all doing so much and sitting down so much. And I think, yeah, you've been able to get best of both worlds there, being able to do what you've done running wise and make a lot of friends and travel the world. Now you're coaching, mate, and you've joined in Run to PB. And across that, those years of experience and those many marathons, you've touched on a bit of the philosophy. I guess in terms of the marathon, what do you think the keys are to success across the marathon?
After doing so many, I think first and foremost, and it's not a philosophy thing, it's actually a very obvious thing, but people maybe don't pay as much attention to it as they should, but you need to get there niggle-free, injury-free, beyond that start line, fresh mentally and feeling confident. I've navigated a few build-ups where I've carried niggles the whole way throughout, and I was dead as a doornail on the start line, you know. Frankfurt being one particular one where I just overtrained. So my philosophy now is really layering those weeks consistently and only doing training that you kind of can absorb, and doing volume that you can absorb. Don't suffer through a build-up and be on the wrong end of a peak when you get there. I've tried a bit of everything. Like, you know, I've dabbled in the old Canova stuff, and my opinion on that is, for the amateur runner, a Canova philosophy doesn't work. It's snippets of it would work, but again, you've only got to do snippets of it that you can absorb as well. Even in Kenya, I came across guys in Canova's group. They were cutting stuff short and they weren't doing the full program behind his back. This 204 guy called Jonathan Mayo, he was complaining to me one day, saying he can't do the moderate Friday workouts because it just breaks. So it isn't for everyone. So I've moved away from that now and probably do very little of it. In fact, I do a lot of fartleks, like I was saying, 2-1 and 1-1. But as a philosophy, it certainly wouldn't be the Canova stuff. Now, if I'm honest, I've probably gone full circle back to the Lydiard approach. Not the detail of the Lydiard, but the whole overarching peak sort of philosophy. You gotta get there mentally and physically ready to lift to a performance, even a performance and an exertion level that you haven't actually touched on in the training, you know, because you've got to be very careful to not do too much of it as well, I believe. Race day has got to be so special in terms of the effort you put in. And if you're going to the well too often in training, you've got nowhere to go on race day, basically. So, just consistency and protecting the consistency.
No, I think a lot of your, the athletes that'll get to be coached by you are going to, you know, obviously have so much that wealth of experience that they can draw upon, and, you know, having competed in so many different marathons and different conditions, and the way you've got, that immense, real passion for the sport, and also really well-read, you know, you're not, and it's good that you're not stuck on one way. There's many ways to skin a cat, and it does come down to that individual. And I think, that's an exciting part for, obviously you run to PB, but have more so definitely the athletes. Yeah. But Chris, great to have you on board, mate.
Been a pleasure, Zaka. It's good to chat and talk running and looking forward to getting involved with you and the run to PB and hopefully sharing maybe some experience. Like, the program is the program, but the journey through that program is where hopefully I can bring some value to some people's running, you know?
Absolutely. Hey, before I let you go, mate, footy season's coming to an end. Now, another rumour I need to clear up. Who are you supporting these days?
Well, as you know, I've been a North Melbourne person for many years, in fact. But I married into Collingwood and our friend Alan Fiella will be very happy to know that I've recently converted for the sake of the family to the black and white.
Yeah, I've had it on good authority. You got your own jersey now, and basically.
Yeah, I'm wearing a kid's jersey so I can fill it out, you know, looking all buff over here.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome, mate. It's been great to have you on, and I think the listeners will really enjoy those stories you've had there in Kenya, and there's plenty more there. So hopefully we can, it's up down the track, or chat catch up for a run and chat a bit more. Yeah,
looking forward to it, mate. Thanks for having me again. Chat soon.
Take care.
Chat.
So good to catch up with Chris there, and I hope all the listeners, yeah, really got an insight into some of the exciting and adventures Chris has had over his long career as a marathoner. And Matty, you would have enjoyed hearing some of those stories at the obviously Kenya, one of his travels and training jaunts he went there. Like something on the bucket list for you?
Yeah, I know, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know about bucket list, but yeah, I wouldn't mind at some point getting over there and checking out the scenes. It'd be completely different, I'd imagine, to a rocking up to a tan session, rocking up to some of the sessions there. It'd be impressive. Like, you'd just have that many good runners around. It's something that put down once or think about
once we can travel again.
Yeah, once we can travel overseas, exactly. What was that?
What's kicking off for the weekend for you, Matt?
I guess much of the same. Looking at a couple of runs or a few runs. I'll probably, last week on the Sunday, I jumped on the treadmill for 65 minutes and then did 60 minutes out on the road. So probably something similar to that on the Sunday. So yeah, I've been enjoying that. Just chucking a podcast or something for the treadmill and then rolling that out. But yeah, we've got the virtual tent for the members. Have you, hopefully you haven't forgotten that, we're doing that tomorrow.
That is true. Yeah, actually you, we do need to prepare for that because we've put our hands up to be the host, and I know we're excited to do that one. It's going to be fun because, like we were sort of talking about a couple of weeks ago, it's really challenging that we can't have the events that we really would have liked to have gone along to and caught up with Run to PB athletes and runners all from everywhere. But I guess this gives us the opportunity to connect with our members, and we put it on our close Facebook group just to sort of give them an opportunity to give us all an opportunity to all catch up and maybe more of an informal way that just, share a bit of a laugh and share some stories out of ISO.
Yeah, and hopefully, we might get some, because I know we've got some athletes running the Gold Coast Running Festival, variety of events. So yeah, might even, and that's on the Sunday morning, obviously. So we might even, hopefully they're on the waters and not on the beers.
Get a bit of a race preview.
Behaving themselves. Yeah. And get a bit of a race preview. So that'd be great if they could. I know a lot of people are zoomed out at the moment, but yeah, if we get a few people on just that informal sort of chat, it'd be fantastic to catch up and do something that we haven't been able to do for quite a while due to obviously COVID.
Looking forward to it, Matty. It'll be good fun. Hey, I think we're pretty much done here. It's been a cracking episode having Chris O on, but next week we've got, you're going to sit down. I know this week we were kind of hoping to get Sammy on, but we've actually had to push it out because you guys are going pretty large on this one and talking all things triathlon shoes and some sessions. Because Sammy's done six-time Kona qualifier, and he actually did the Ironman in 9 hours 11, the age of 43. So as a masters athlete to go and knock that out. I know a lot of people who know Ironman, to run that, to complete that time in 9 hours is good going.
Bloody impressive, eh? Mate, that's a, like 9 hours of 9 hours of working hard. Like, that's it's hard to bloody sit down for not with them for 9 hours, let alone get in the water, get on the bike and go out running for it. So that'll be a good chat and sort of get his thoughts on sort of the training side of triathlon, especially linked obviously a lot to running. So yeah, it'll be interesting to hear what his thoughts are and sort of where he feels like it should be heading. Some of the things that he's worked with his athletes for.
was going to say, he's worked with a lot of triathletes that have either transitioned into running or have used his coaching just to improve their run leg. So, I'd be really interested to hear his thoughts on that. And he's obviously, he's really into the scene. He's quite across the new training philosophies and obviously the shoes as well. That'll be great to hear his take on that. And I know he's still involved in training. You know, he does work on the bike. I've seen he's out there smashing up the Zwift. I've seen him on Strava. So, yeah, he's going really well, and it'll be really interesting to hear his take on that next episode.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to that. And you mentioned something about bucket list before. I know we've got a lot of athletes doing time trials and having races. But yeah, one of the bucket lists, I remember one of Gemma's athletes, Gary, he's actually going to have a crack at sub 40, and that's been on his bucket list for a long time. So he's having a crack tomorrow. So yeah. Wishing him and all the others, all our other athletes, the best for a few races that are popping up. I know, they've got some time trials as well. And congrats to Steph for winning race on the top at trail race on the weekend. Steph Austin, obviously our coach, everyone's PB, and then Brady also with his half marathon time trial effort that I think might have had about 6,000 views. Impressive. coaches getting out and doing some amazing things as well out on the trails and out on the roads.
Yeah, these time trials have really added another dimension for a few people where had to just have some blocks and then giving us an outlet to really go and have a crack. And I know I've got Anna going around tomorrow in a 5K. And that'll be really, she's come off an injury, and then into a really good block for the last sort of 6 weeks. So really excited to see how she'll go on that one. And Shannon's got a time trial this week. So there's a few people in my crew going around. I know from the other coaches that they're all setting them up over the next few weeks. So we'll definitely do a bit of a back to our round the tracks or trails. And by then we'll come up with a better, catchier name. To sort of recap some of those results.
Yeah, absolutely. No, looking forward to it. And yeah, so hopefully you all enjoy the episode and relish in that the rest of your run.
Cheers, everyone. Stay safe and enjoy the rest of your run.